Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When Bryce is barred from entering the Autumn King's villa, she's left without an outlet to vent her frustrations. Hunt finds her at an old haunt and questions whether Bryce is in a healthy mindset given all of the revelations she's been forced to accept. As a result of Hunt's request that Victoria use the Fae Tech to review Danica's old clothes, Micah sends Hunt on a mission that leaves him wrecked and a shell of himself. Bryce is there to help Hunt pick up the pieces, and the energy between them shifts, but Bryce becomes distracted with the information of Synth being detected on the clothes of the murder victims, including Danica, and Hunt has to ground her by reminding her to prioritize those who matter most. The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This week, we're discussing chapters 52 through 56 in House of Earth and Blood.
This week, we ask ourselves, in what way does the exchange of trauma between Bryce and Hunt help or hinder the development of their relationship?
Themes we see in this section include self-worth and self-doubt. We pick up in chapter 52 where Bryce has just learned that the Fae, or aka the Autumn King, have had tech the entire time over the last 2 years since Danica's death that they refused to use to help identify her murderer, even right after she died. And now that they know that Briggs hasn't murdered Danica, they still refuse to use it. Bryce is livid, and she wants so badly to confront the Autumn King. We start out the episode with, quote, Bryce's blood roared, and she hurtled past. And it's just very violent, active motion that's happening right now.
I don't know why she's surprised, though.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
Do you think your daddy was going to help? The Fae houses are all, quote, fenced with wrought iron, and this immediately made me think of ACOTAR and fairy lore. So in fairy lore, iron is dangerous or deadly to fairies. They can't touch it. Mm-hmm. And we see SJM use that lore in ACOTAR, where it's kind of not true, but it's like a lie that the fairies told the humans. And same thing here. I don't think iron is deadly to Fae in this world, but I feel like knowing that lore, it's meant to symbolize we don't care that this supposed thing might be dangerous to us.
Yeah, I think it shows how far away they are from true feyness.
Yeah.
Which I think emphasizes the whole point that Micah has brought up to the Autumn King, which is like, you guys have lost your greatness.
Yep.
Maybe if they were more fey,
maybe they wouldn't need to
iron would be more true.
Yeah, or they wouldn't need to put a gate up.
Oh, that's also
and
fair.
It's like, yeah, you could defend yourself.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now, I know I started out by saying Bryce has all this aggressive action that's happening at the start of the chapter, but she keeps hitting obstacles. And really quickly, she starts to lose steam. Not because she wants to lose steam, but because things keep impeding her path. There are physically shut doors. There's guards at the door. There's even a shield, like a wall of heat, on top of this iron fence. And then, of course, there's the emotional barrier when the guards call her a half-breed and basically deem her unworthy of seeking audience with her quote-unquote king. Even though Hunt and Rune come to her aid, and they're powerful in this coming to support her, you know, Hunt is showing up as the Umbra Mortis, Rune is showing up as the Prince of the Fae, Crown Prince of the Valbaran Fae. Excuse me.
Thank you. Show your respect.
That's right. Even they are not strong enough to get her past these obstacles.
Yeah, Autumn King's a dick.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Although I do love how Hunt defends Bryce. He says to the guards, quote, "The lady wants an audience with His Majesty." And I don't think he's being facetious by calling her a lady. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he genuinely believes everything that he is saying in that moment. Mm-hmm. It's just the irony is that she's a princess, not a lady. And then you also have, quote, "He'd pummel these assholes into dust for her, fight his way inside the gate so that she could have a chat with the king." And it really reminds me of when Bryce went to the meat market and she knew Hunt was there to appear like her protector, to mm-hmm. appear like he would be there to defend her. And now here he is actually doing that. So before she was exercising mm-hmm. his reputation, and now she's holding back because she doesn't want him to engage in a fight.
Yeah, I found this moment really fascinating because, and I don't know if you got this sense, Jack, Bryce doesn't attach any emotion to this revelation that, oh, he was willing to fight for her. And in my mind, it's a like, ooh, butterflies.
Yeah.
Bryce doesn't attach any emotion to the observation. But in the subtext, I sense that she's into it.
Yeah. I think she's more amazed than anything else. I think that this is really the first time that she realizes he's an extension of her. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, there's like a term where it's like an extension of her arm or something. But I don't think she's had anyone who would go to bat for her like this since Danica and the Pack of Wolves.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And something he says at the end of this series of chapters, which I think is relevant here, is he calls her his partner.
Yeah.
That partners look out for each other.
Yep.
And he's really exhibiting that right now.
Yep. And it sucks because, like, I know you're going to get into Rune in a minute, but it's like you have Hunt who's ready to be like, I will fight whoever I got to fight to get you in there, to talk to the king that I have no idea what you want to talk to him about or what relation you have. And then you have Rune that's more of like, go away. Let's make this go away. Don't fight this.
Yeah. And I think it's because ultimately Rune is hiding information about the Autumn King.
Yeah.
And that information is, spoiler, how he was abused by his father. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about it a lot this season, even though it's not actually clear in this novel. But that really influences how he approaches the Autumn King and how he advises Bryce. And at this moment, that advice is not welcome.
Yeah.
He does everything with the best of intention, but it just comes back and bites him in the ass, and it just pisses Bryce off more. And it doesn't help that Rune mistakes the Autumn King's intentions. Despite all he knows about the Autumn King, he still misinterprets the Autumn King's actions, which is really, really tragic, because what that tells me is that Rune has done a lot in his life to justify what the Autumn King has done.
Baby boy still tries to defend him.
Yep. So, for example, Rune tells Bryce, quote, He gave enough of a shit about you to want me to be your living guard. Which Bryce shuts down immediately. And I would agree.
Yeah.
The Autumn King didn't do it to protect Bryce. He did it to protect his own interests.
Absolutely.
He didn't want Bryce to get the horn and give it to Jespa.
Nope.
Rune also tries to apologize about Danica and her death. And Bryce shuts him down again. And I have to agree, now is not the time when she is trying to talk to her father for you to distract her by talking about Danica.
Yeah, let me bring up this really traumatic subject for you. By the way, super sorry about that. Bye. Yeah.
Again, he has the best of intentions.
He does. I think it's fun. Horrible use of the word fun.
Yeah.
But I think it's fun to look back and see these moments and just saying, like, how under his thumb Rune really is with the Autumn King.
Yeah.
Because I think we kind of come in and we see, you know, he's a bad boy rebel, but in actuality, he is still very much controlled by his dad.
Oh, yeah. Still very much so.
Yeah.
To cope with her feelings that she has not been able to vent that are exacerbated by Rune's actions, Bryce runs to her old haunt, Lethe, which is a whiskey bar. Lethe is apparently Greek for oblivion, which feels appropriate for a whiskey bar.
So smart.
It's so smart. Now, I found it really curious that SJM took the time to describe the interior of the bar, because it's not attractive from my point of view. It's really odd, actually.
Someone's about to stare at their home and be like, what?
And I could be reading into it. However, I did want to take a moment to really think about this. And I feel like I can understand where SJM is going, assuming she attached meaning to it. So the floor, quote, lent itself to an optical illusion painted with black, gray, and white cubes. The bar itself is made from fogged glass and black metal, all clean lines and square edges. Now, Bryce has gone to a whiskey bar that she hasn't been to since Danica's death.
Yep.
And she's choosing to buy whiskey and drink whiskey. So what that's telling us is she is seeking old comforts. She's regressing back to the person, or trying to be the person she was before Danica's death.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, moving forward, trying to look for Danica's murderer in the present is not working.
Yeah.
And I think that the environment of this bar reflects that. Bryce is seeking clarity. She wants to go somewhere where things are black and white, where she understands things. And that's reflected in the black and white floor, the clean lines of the bar.
But at the same time, the floor is an optical illusion, so she's not going to get clarity, just like she's about to be so not who she is.
Exactly. And even though there's black and white cubes, there's also gray cubes. Yeah. And the bar is actually fogged glass. So even though she thinks she's going toward a place of clarity, it's just as murky as the present.
Yep.
And she even has this reflection about the whiskey. Quote, gods, it tasted awful. Why had she ever guzzled this stuff down?
I question that every time I drink whiskey.
I question that anytime anyone drinks whiskey. But I think even as she's trying to seek clarity, Bryce is realizing that she's not going to get there, because this is not the comfort it used to be.
Yeah. The second Bryce sits down when she enters this whiskey lounge, she takes her shoes off. And I get it. She's been running around in flats, not the move. And having your feet hurt, it sucks. But it feels like a little bit more to me. You see, Bryce is about to attack Hunt, and the removal of shoes feels like the removal of civility, or trying, because, you know, you're going into a public place and you're just straight up taking off your shoes. That's not really, you know, you're stepping outside of societal rules.
Yeah. No shirt, no shoes, no service.
Exactly. So it's just kind of setting us up for how she's about to act.
That's a great point. Didn't even think about it.
Thank you.
Now, Hunt is really trying to be supportive. You know, he knows Bryce's leg often hurts. She just ran away from the Autumn. She ran to the Autumn King, then ran away from his villa.
She really needs to stop running.
She needs to stop running. And so what does Hunt do? He picks up a tonic to help her with the pain. And that is really sweet. Now, to me, this is just a mirror of what he was doing when Bryce wasn't eating. He was making food not to overpower her, but to provide her support. And that's the same thing with the tonic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even mad that she's running and her leg hurts, I'm more mad that she's just running. I think that's
cruel.
That's just, it's not okay. So we need to have representation of more female characters who just don't like running.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hunt has officially stepped into the caregiver role. Honestly, he's been in that caregiver role for a while now. He's been feeding her. He's been taking care of her. And now he is mother henning a lot. He got her the medicine. He is that caretaker. And Hunt is essentially stepping into that quote unquote feminine role. Again, we're using societal definitions here. While Bryce has taken on the quote unquote masculine role by using sex as a weapon. Normally, Bryce is the one who is attacked for her sexual exploits, for her desire. And now she's about to attack Hunt. And that is just so not her move. She is not one to sex shame, kink shame, or anything shame. But she's lashing out.
Yeah. And to me, it comes from a place of jealousy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's more than just a place of jealousy with Shahar, though. I think it's a place of jealousy that he's found peace.
Mm. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Because she, I think, understands that he's been through worse, objectively speaking. Like, it's not a competition, but he's a slave. So, you know, fuck you. Like, he has it worse. He has it much worse. And yet here he is being reasonable, being kind and supportive. And
she wants to feel her feelings.
Yeah. And the thing is, Hunt isn't even stopping her from feeling her feelings. Mm-hmm. Hunt wants to be on her team. He doesn't judge her for drinking. He says, quote, "It's your rule. You can end it whenever you like." Additionally, he says, quote, "Look, I'll sit here with you while you get stupid drunk if that's what you want. But I'll just say this first. There are better ways of dealing with it." Hunt is not judging her. He's willing to go down this path with her, but she won't let him. So, you know, just that extra barrier of, I think the idea of not being judged is even hurtful for her because she's used to being judged.
Yeah. Yeah. She's seeking comforts of old patterns.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean good old patterns.
Yeah. And right now he's not doing what everyone else would do.
Right.
Which is shame her. And normally Bryce uses her weapons for the sake of good. You know, like she tears down men, the number one sake of good here. And sex and femininity, those are the weapons that she uses. But now the weapon is to hurt our baby boy Hunt. And that's just so not like her.
Just can't do that.
You know, quote, "What would she, Shahar, think about the way you manhandled me and practically devoured my neck the other night?" Such a low blow. Also, is there a hickey? No. So he did not devour your neck. He nuzzled.
Well, that's where she's at, right? She's hyperbolic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she doesn't want to be reasonable.
No, not at all. And the words that she chooses, this is why you have to be so careful with your words. And I'm such a sucker of like analyzing, not analyzing, I'm a nitpicker. So if someone says something, I'm just like, well, you said this word. Mm-hmm. That means this. Mm-hmm. And Hunt is doing that too, because the word manhandled really hits him hard. Mm-hmm. He says that he even lingers on that word manhandled.
Because it implies assault.
Yeah. Violence.
And he thought in the moment that it was consensual.
Yes, because it was.
Because it was.
As we're realizing, Hunt is not a violent person. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets all big tough and like, I'm going to electrocute you.
And he
you?
Has to kill people.
But he has to kill people, but that's how we see that he's not violent.
Right.
You know, there's times that he fluffs off his chest and he's like ready to fight if it's time. But for the most part,
He
doesn't want to. He's not a violent guy at all. I honestly think he'd be fine just starting a bakery, you know, Hunt's Bakery.
Thunder. Honestly, I think he would do a dog walking service.
Wow.
Can't you see it?
No.
With syrinx?
I think he spoils just syrinx.
Okay.
But I see him in an apron in my head, but I also see him with other dogs now. I think he can do both. He's a multifaceted man.
You said you see him in an apron and I saw him naked with an apron on.
Didn't say that he didn't have, I didn't say that he wasn't wearing clothes underneath. So you know what? My vision can be your vision.
After this exchange, Hunt leaves because he's like, you know what? If you want to be an asshole, but I don't have to stick around.
Yep.
And he says, I'll see you at home.
Ah, I know.
Which Bryce does react to, like, that kind of puts her back in her place.
Yeah.
Hunt leaves because he has every right to. When Bryce returns home later on, she brings home food, and she uses that food as a way to apologize to Hunt. Now, I think that this is a different dynamic than we've seen before when it comes to food, especially when it's related to Bryce. Leading up to this moment, we've seen Bryce refuse to eat. We've seen her try to eat spoiled food. Mm-hmm. At least from what we've seen in this book, she doesn't necessarily have a positive relationship with food.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that she has an eating disorder. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we have not seen a positive interaction with her and food on the page.
That's so true.
And so this is the first time we're seeing Bryce really make an effort to cook, even if it has too much paprika or whatever it is in there.
Ooh, the last time we saw her have a positive interaction with food was the pizza that she ate with Danica.
Yes. It's a great point.
Which would make sense why she hasn't enjoyed life, because eating food is part of life.
Yep, that's right. This is even one step above that because she is making it. It's not to-go mm-hmm. pizza. It's not a beer from the fridge.
Yep.
It is food she herself bought and is preparing. Even if Hunt critiques her, he's doing it just to because he wants to poke her in the ribs. Like, that's just their dynamic right now.
Yeah.
To me, the food, no matter... regardless if it's made poorly or well, right now that food is symbolic of Bryce reciprocating Hunt's support for her and the growing intimacy, where he was cooking eggs for her and trying to cook dinner for her when she wasn't eating. She's now trying to cook and show her own way of supporting him.
Yeah.
And growing their intimacy where she was trying to avoid it before.
Amy and I were texting each other as we were doing our notes, and at one point, I think I said something about, like, food is power, and you wrote back, yeah, it's like Asham suddenly remembered that this is her thing.
Yeah, it like, is!
We haven't, like, finally, we're seeing this dynamic and her use of food, which she does so well in ACOTAR. I'm just happy to see it be used again.
Yeah, and she does it well in this book, but actually, it makes me pause to think about how we're only starting to see it in the last 100 pages
mm-hmm.
as Bryce and Hunt are growing more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the last time we saw her with food in a meaningful way was with Danica.
Yeah.
And so to some extent, SJM hasn't forgotten what she's good at. She withheld it because Bryce wasn't ready for it.
It makes her even better.
Pisses me off. And I'm not really pissed off. I'm just
like, it's
like
happy,
awe.
Angry. Yeah. It's this is like when I throw things at Amy.
Yes. That's my.
Yes.
Yes.
Bryce knows what Hunt wants, and what Hunt wants is emotional intimacy. It's like Hunt got a taste of emotional intimacy and just can't stop.
Yeah.
He is now the pusher of emotional intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he says something really vulnerable to her along the lines of, you know, working with you has been great. I've really enjoyed my time with you. She never reciprocates.
Mm-hmm.
He'll open up about something about him, and then she just doesn't fully reciprocate. Now, Bryce is finally confessing to her own emotions, her own turmoil, and this is the apology to Hunt. Her vulnerability is a peace offering in a way that Hunt needs.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryce admits her own insecurities with her friends, even. She says that she was a mess before Danica died.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "The partying stuff was the only time when the four of us were on equal footing." So Bryce had some major issues thinking that her friends were all better than her. And we all do this, you know, we compare ourselves to our friends and we're mm-hmm. like, oh my God, they're so much farther than I am. I'm still here. I haven't gotten that promotion. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't have a house. The list can go on and on. But Bryce is a literal princess.
Yeah.
She is Mia Anopoulos. What I can't say it, but
Mia Thermopolis.
Thermopolis. Thank you. Like, she's a princess. And better than that, you're a secret princess. That makes it being a princess so much cooler now.
Yeah.
I know she can't really lean into that because she doesn't want to be associated with the Autumn King, but I'm just saying it's all about perspective. And Bryce wasn't giving herself enough perspective.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you bring up this moment because I actually want to talk about Hunt's perspective on this.
Mm-hmm.
Something I really appreciate about Hunt and that I think SJM does well, and we've talked about this before, is how his actions demonstrate his age. Every time that he made a comment about how I have fun with you, Quinlan. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad I get to work with you. He has no expectations for reciprocation.
Yeah, yeah.
Which to me shows maturity. But also in this moment, when she starts going off on her tangent uh-huh. about her friends, he explicitly thinks he knows she's working up to something.
Yep.
And so he just lets her do her thing to work through what she needs to work through and talk about what she needs to talk about.
Yep.
And in the process of being patient with her, he gets the reciprocation that he deserves.
He is, I mean, we love Cassian and we call him an emotionally intelligent king. He's giving Cassian a run for his money right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which is such a shame because Hunt is not perfect.
Hunt is not perfect, but I like him more because sometimes Cassian is almost too perfect.
Yeah, yeah. So true.
I mean, I take it, Cassian's still my favorite, but in a character development wise.
I don't know. Hunt is, I used to not care for Hunt, but now I'm starting to.
Well, no, that's what I mean is like Hunt is my favorite character development
wise,
but Cassian's my favorite in my heart.
Got it. Because you are Cassian.
Because I love myself.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a moment when Bryce tells Hunt about Danica wanting to free caged animals and the lengths the two of them went to make that happen. At that moment, Hunt thinks, quote, the party princess. Hunt and the Triari had mocked her behind her back. What we're starting to see in the narrative, and we see it both in Hunt's and Bryce's perspectives, is they make observations without attaching emotion, because to attach emotion would be too telling, I think, from a narrative point of view.
Uh-huh.
So for me, what I'm reading in the subtext here is that Hunt feels regret.
Yes.
Acknowledges he and the Triari were wrong and moves on.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't wallow in it.
Yeah.
But he's like, ah, shit.
Yeah. And it's one of those moments where is it worth him saying, hey, by the way, I said and thought the same things about you.
No.
No, but I think that hurts. You're in order. If someone does that, they're doing it more for the sake of themselves versus the nice thing to do is make those efforts and show the change.
Yeah.
You don't have to go in and be like, hey, I secretly thought you were a piece of shit.
Right. Right. You just stop acting like you think that.
Exactly.
I have to hand it to Hunt. He's pretty inspirational at this point. He's trying to motivate Bryce and comfort her. And so what he tells her is that living and living well is the greatest fuck you that you can ever give them. Them being society.
Yeah.
And
he's not wrong.
He is not wrong. But it is very hard to keep that perspective.
Yeah. It's just about living and not thinking about other people while you choose to live.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go actively like, fuck you guys and live. But you just don't make choices based on them.
Yeah.
Bryce asks Hunt if he could do it all over again, march under Shahar's banner, would he do it again? And I feel like he was going around in circles and would not answer that damn question. And at first I was really annoyed. I'm like, bro, answer the freaking question. But then as I was doing these notes, I was appreciating the fact that he's actually thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's having a conversation. He's processing what would have happened. And he says he doesn't normally like to think about this, but for Bryce, he's going to. And he says, quote, if I hadn't rebelled with her, I'd probably have been noticed by another archangel. Another quote, if I hadn't rebelled, I'd wind up in a sugar-coated version of life now. Hunt eventually gets there and says that he would do it again. And he would make the choice of rebelling. And he does say, like, it was the right thing to do. So he still has that sense of right and wrong. But I also feel like this process has made him realize on some level that Shahar wasn't great. I have more thoughts on this in the breadcrumbs. So stick around.
I will say, I feel like this is one of those questions that your therapist asks and you're like, damn, I was really hoping to never think about that question. And then you have to go through the thought exercise of like, okay, I'm going to think about this question. And you're sometimes you get to a conclusion where you're like, I don't feel great about this.
And then sometimes you look at your therapist and you say, did I get it right? Can you just tell me the answer? I need you to dial me in here.
I always know I'm right when I talk to my therapist.
Maybe we should talk about that in therapy.
No, I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
No, I know. I know because we've seen each other after therapy and I've seen the streak of tears.
Yeah.
On both sides, you and me. Yeah. Gotta love therapists. Shout out Esther. Earlier in this chapter, we talked about sex being used as a weapon, and here we're seeing it as an olive branch. Bryce and Hunt are getting back to their normal pace of things, and it's just a sweet moment. Quote, a corner of his mouth turned up. You can dump your baggage on my lap anytime, Quinlan. They're back to their normal.
Yeah, and she accuses him of making it dirty, but that's what makes it their dynamic fun.
Exactly.
When we get to chapter 53, it is raining again, and we've talked about rain being a rebirth.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's a rebirth and the news calls it the rainiest spring on record, it just makes sense when you have the fact that Lunathian's literally going to be reborn at the end of this book.
It's a great point. Bryce's perspective is different, though. Bryce calls the rain a bad omen. Quote, today would suck. And I have to acknowledge this because that is the traditional interpretation of rain, not only in life, but in literature. Rain and storms, thunder and lightning, all those things are ill omens.
Yeah.
Or a sign of conflict or a sign of danger.
I would like different signs of conflict and danger, please. Because, like, when it rains and it's cloudy, it's like, ooh, I'm going to read today. I'm going to cook something warm and cozy. I don't like sunny days. Give me that. Like, the sun was high. Allergies were strong. War was coming.
Yeah. When Bryce takes Syrinx for a walk, she hyperfixates on the hop toad.
Yeah, what was that?
And I could not figure it out. Part of me was like, it just is there to make us uncomfortable because Bryce is uncomfortable. But I also realized after a Google search that toads can be symbols of the devil in literature.
Ooh.
Especially in like early literature through the Middle Ages.
Yeah. No, that sounds familiar.
So for Bryce, she's just like, oh, it's raining, ill omen. Oh, a toad, ill omen.
Yeah.
And she's just on high alert right now.
I like that more because I was just like, is this a shifter that I can't put together? Like, what are we doing here? It also reminded me of Therion and the crab.
Yeah.
And just this like moment of character insight.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the idea that it's continuing the ill omen.
Yeah.
Hunt finally gets Bryce to eat. And when Bryce says that she doesn't need a male telling her when to eat, he counters saying, quote, how about a friend telling you that you had an understandably rough night and you get mean as shit when you're hungry? And this is like a new type of food is power. Like everything about the use of food is so elevated and different than ACOTAR.
Mm-hmm.
Food is power. Food is intimacy. Food is peace. Food is healing.
Yeah.
And again, when did he become so emotionally intelligent? Because he was quite the sexist at the beginning of the book. I'm right. So sorry for that.
Well, and think about it. This is a parallel. This is a mirror to the White Raven before the bombing. He was ordering what she normally ate.
Yep.
Because he knew she hadn't eaten before.
Yep. But
he didn't ask her permission. And she went off on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's now explaining, like, look, I care about you. You've had a rough situation.
Understandably
rough. Like you, I care. I want you to be healthy and strong.
Yeah.
It's a completely different place than when they were at the White Raven earlier in this
Seriously.
Novel.
Seriously. I don't even know what it's like to be with a man who cooks.
May you find yourself a husband who cooks.
Amen to that. I really need the listeners to start rallying behind this cause. Where are your brothers? Your cousins, your friends, countrymen, lend me your ears.
Hunt is called into Micah's office at the start of chapter 54. Now, this is because Hunt asked Victoria to run the Fae Tech on Danica's old clothes because they've now learned that this is an option that wasn't pursued at the time of Danica's death. Micah has now found out. He is pissed. So he calls Hunt to his office to basically punish him. And I don't know why I didn't see this as a breadcrumb the first time I read this book. Because if you really think about it, this is the moment we should have begun to suspect Micah. Micah is using his position of power to punish Hunt for using the Fae Tech. And that's one perspective. But the other perspective is that he's punishing Hunt for using Fae Tech because it will get him closer to the truth. And Micah does not want Hunt to get closer to the truth.
I'm trying to remember what I thought when I first read this moment. You know what I mean? Like, what was my first, oh, he's mad. That makes sense.
Right.
La-di-da. You know what I mean?
Well, it does. Like, it does from he didn't ask permission.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
he questioned
it's not a big enough stretch that I seriously questioned it the first time because I went right along with it. But when you know the truth, it's so painful how obvious it is.
Yep. And it's because, like we talked about in last week's episode, Micah is panicking.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt and Bryce are too good of a team and they keep getting closer to
the truth.
They're
doing the job you hired them for, bro.
Right. And he wanted them to be dumber and convict someone like Sabine.
Mm-hmm.
Micah even takes this moment to threaten a trade that he will give Hunt to Sandriel, which A, is a low blow, but B, also foreshadows what will happen, which is just heartbreaking.
They all die.
And like us on our first read, Hunt is misinterpreting Micah's anger in this moment. Hunt thinks, quote, for Sabine, for taking too long, for just existing. It's ironic because it's so off base, but it's also so tragic because we see, even though Hunt has been doing so much to support Bryce, he still thinks so little of himself.
That moment, his thought process, that quote, it made me really sink in and realize just how long he's been a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to even include his time with Shahar.
Okay.
He wasn't a slave. He made his choice, but he was under someone's thumb. He was there listening to other people's rules.
Yeah.
And even if you were to remove like his time with Shahar, he was still 32 or 33 when things went down.
Mm-hmm.
He has been a slave for the majority of his life. He has barely been free. Of course, he has no self-worth. He has been owned his entire life.
Yeah, which is... I can't even imagine.
No.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
As Hunt prepares himself to do Micah's dirty work, he slips away from himself in all aspects. Quote, every movement was careful, deliberate. Every shift of his body as he donned his black battle suit quieted his mind, pulling him farther and farther from himself. It's like a bedtime routine. You know how you develop routines to train your body like, oh, I am now going to bed.
Yep.
Or, oh, I am now going to work. Or, oh, I am now leaving work.
Yep.
He has trained his body or his mind to detach from his body through these deliberate movements of putting on the uniform that he essentially locks himself away inside of. The uniform represents the Umbra Mortis and Hunt is hidden away. Hunt even turns away his phone when Bryce texts him so he can't be brought back, and eventually he'll shut it off completely. And his thoughts, as all of this is happening, reflect what we saw with him and Micah in Micah's office. Quote, he was a stain against the brightness, a shadow standing against the sun. Like, he doesn't deserve to exist.
Yeah.
Which is very, very sad.
It's so sad. You do deserve to exist. And it just reminds me more of the Oracle / Luna temple.
Well, it also
comparison.
Yeah.
Where it was like dark and like he keeps associating himself with darkness.
Right, right. It also reminds me of last week when we talked about Bryce's potentially wanting to end her own life. Right. Both of them are capable of going to very dark places.
Yep.
Because of their life experiences. And I don't blame them. It is all very tragic.
Absolutely.
Now, Bryce woke up on this day feeling like the rain was an ill omen, seeing the toad who's a symbol of the devil. Like, everything has put her on edge. So it's not a shock when she begins to panic because it's 11 p.m. and she still hasn't seen Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So what does Bryce do? Bryce calls Rune, which is really, really sweet.
So sweet.
No matter how much they fight and tend to be at each other's throats, what this is demonstrating to me is that she trusts Rune.
It's her big brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
He protects her.
He's supposed to solve all her problems.
Right?
When Hunt does return to the apartment, Bryce hangs up on Rune. And we switch to Hunt's point of view. And it is so warped. It's continuing the thread that we saw start in Micah's office. Quote, he couldn't stand the look of pure knee-wobbling relief on Bryce's face. Now, in my mind, this means he views himself as unworthy of that relief.
Yep, not absolutely.
Not that the relief is disgusting, but that he's not deserving of that relief.
That relief has been spent on him. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
But at the same time, he's a paradox because he also, quote, couldn't stand the horror and pain on her face because he feels like he's being judged
mm-hmm.
for all the blood and coming home in the form of the Ombra Mortis. Quote, she had looked so horrified. It was no surprise. She couldn't have really understood what he was, who he was, until now. And Hunt didn't ever really want her to see that. But he's subjected her to it. And I'm sure in some way, in his mind, it's the end of their relationship. Like, yeah. He's gone too far.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if he's, like, I agree. Some part of his mind thinks that. I think the other part of his mind is just so sucked into oblivion.
Yeah.
It's, what like, he is void.
Yeah.
We now go into Bryce's point of view, and she finds Hunt and immediately starts to take care of him. He is in the shower, and he is self-harming. Like, we talked a little bit about the self-harm that he does with the shower, but now we really get to see it where he's scorching his body, and then it heals. Scorch, heal, scorch, heal. And this is meant to be a very clear parallel to Hunt having taken care of Bryce for 5 days in a row. Mm-hmm. And then some, let's be real. Because she wasn't eating, she wasn't speaking, and, you know, of course she wasn't going to be doing any pain meds. Now Bryce is the one to step into that caretaker role. And this is not a role that we've seen from her yet. We've seen clues of it when it comes to Lahaba and Syrinx, where she wants to care for people, but we've never seen the side of Bryce before where she rolls up her sleeves, is willing to get into the shower completely clothed and do the work to help take care of him. And I have to say, I think she does a good job of it.
Yeah.
Hunt is naked. I love the fan art that I've seen of this scene. It's mm-hmm. so heartbreaking.
It is.
And Bryce is fully clothed. So this is not meant to be a sexy moment. And I think Asham does such a good job of never making it sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Bryce is aware of his body and his manhood, just or the considerableness. I think she just says considerable
size.
She doesn't even say size. She's just the considerable object. I don't know. It's not about that. It's about a different type of being stripped down. So Hunt is literally stripped down. He is vulnerable after what happened. And now Bryce is entering into his world of vulnerability, the shower. But she isn't stripped down, literally or figuratively. Quote, he just watched her with that raw openness, more intimate than any touch of his lips on her neck. Like he indeed saw everything she was and had been and might yet become. Hunt's nakedness is nowhere near as intimate as the nakedness of his eyes, really, like the way that he looks at her, the intimacy there. He is putting his faith and trust in her. He is allowing her to take care of him. You know, if it's up to him, he would just keep hurting himself.
Right.
And he's saying, okay, I'm willing to do it, but like, I need you to literally do it for me. Get me out of here. Even the act of dressing Hunt, it's almost childlike. It's almost like a mother taking care of their child. Like, okay, step, take one step. Now take two steps into your underwear and pull it all up. And symbolism doesn't always have to be super hidden. Sometimes mm-hmm. it can be very loud and aggressive, which it is here, because she's literally putting him back together,
mm-hmm.
helping him get dressed. I don't think it takes away at all of what's happening and what the metaphors are happening here. And she can only do a little to help him, aka like only help his underwear. She can't figure out the flaps. Mm-hmm. He has to be the one to finish putting himself together.
Right.
But she got him to this point.
Right. And he doesn't finish putting himself together right away.
Yep.
Right. He ends up in bed in his underwear and she ends up putting on his shirt and being like, well, this is it.
Yeah.
But I love what you're saying, because there are some times when an author is using the metaphor in the action and it is so heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel heavy-handed here.
No.
It is artfully done. And I think part of that is because, for me at least, the mother and child comparison that you made
mm-hmm.
could lend itself to very heavy power dynamics.
True.
Between the characters.
Yep.
And even that isn't here.
Yep. Yep.
Even though it does feel like a mother putting on a child's underwear or helping a child put on their underwear, it also feels like an equal helping an equal.
Yep.
And gone is any sense of patronization or condescension.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly something, I would say, of unconditional love.
Absolutely. He's never less than her.
Yeah.
I think this is one of my favorite scenes mm-hmm. out of all of SJM's books. Not the top one. I'm not going to say like this is the number one, but top five of just how well written it is.
Yeah.
And the symbolism just continues when Bryce goes to tuck him into bed, but Hunt won't let her go. He asks her to stay. And Bryce decides to sit in bed with him, but, you know, she doesn't want to necessarily lay down and cuddle up. So she just kind of leans against the headboard and quote, "She tried not to look too shocked when he laid his head on her thigh, his arm crossing across her to rest on the pillow. A child laying his head on his mother's lap, a friend looking for any sort of reassuring contact to remind him that he was a living being." And what does this remind me of? This reminds me of Chthona and Solas, the statue that is called the Embrace. And it is Solas burying his face into Chthona's breasts in a need of comfort. And this is an exact representation. Like, I know his face isn't in her boobs, but this is meant to be that moment.
Of equals coming together.
Yeah.
And it's funny that we see that exact image mm-hmm. at the end of this section.
Yep. SJM, what are you doing to me? What are these accents I'm doing?
I do not know.
It's late. It's two episodes in a row we've recorded at night.
Yeah, we shouldn't be allowed to do that anymore. Chapter 50 feet.
That just might stay.
Oh man. Where we started the previous set of chapters with rain, we are now starting chapter 55 with sunshine. Previously, with the rain, Bryce thought it was an ill omen. So naturally, I feel like we should assume with the sunshine, things are better. And that's because, not because things are better, but because Bryce has helped Hunt come out of his darkness. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
While Hunt is still in bed and Bryce is making coffee, she reflects on her relationship with Rune because she reads through the messages he sent following her frantic phone call to him the night before. What this all leads to is a reflection of Bryce trying to understand how her relationship with Rune got to where it was, because we know from both of their perspectives that she really, really cared about Rune at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so she reveals to the reader, quote, "Rune had wounded her, and it had scared the hell out of her that he held such power, that she had wanted so many things from him, imagined so many things with her brother, adventures and holidays and ordinary moments, and he had the ability to rip it all away." And that's just like the Autumn King, when you think about it. He ripped away the opportunity for a normal relationship between mm-hmm. Bryce and her father. And you can't blame Bryce for being gun-shy, so that by the time she was 16 and Rune did one wrong thing,
mm-hmm.
she was like, fuck, I'm out.
I mean, and then you add the fact that, like, she knew about her power.
Yeah.
And that fear of what it would mean to Rune.
Yeah.
And that fear of rejection from him.
Right, right. And it explains why Bryce is kind of standoffish with everyone that she interacts with.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, she doesn't want anyone to have power over her and how she feels, because we've seen how she feels with Danica's death.
Mm-hmm.
She was powerless to that. We see her avoid allowing her parents to come into town because she doesn't want them to be in harm's way. Because if something ever happened to them,
yep,
she would once again be powerless to the grief.
Yep.
And she doesn't like that feeling.
Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye!